And welcome back to your extended news at noon. Tracy Morgan, of course, with you. So we are going to take some time with Dr. John Love. It's been some time that we've talked to him. He's the infectious disease specialist with the Butler Health System. And of course, we've spent many conversations with him and a lot of time talking about COVID and then when we got to the vaccines. And one thing we didn't address with him was the infant vaccines. And so I wanted to have him back on the program. And first of all, I just want to welcome you back. I know we said the next time we talked, we wanted to talk about something else, but this is good news, I would think, to have infant vaccines.
Thanks for having me back, Tracy. I think generally this is good news. This is something that a lot of us have been waiting for a long time. This is an age group that has gone without the benefits of vaccination for up until now. And so you think about, way back when we started adult vaccinations in like December 2020, and we're finally getting to July 2022 and getting, this population covered. I think just adds to our efforts at, mitigating this risk across our community.
So let's step back, if you don't mind, and talk about vaccinating young individuals as a whole. You and I have talked about this off the air before in the past many months. And there's just that thought out there that a lot of us have grown up with about that I don't want to say discounting vaccines, but you get a little leery of it. And I don't know why we've grown up that way. But when it comes to now having infant vaccines, I'm sure a lot of people are questioning, I think I want to do it, but I'm not sure. It almost feels the same that we as adults went through with the COVID vaccine. But when you're always talking about young kids, this is always the topic of conversation.
Well, I mean, there's been a historic, in the last couple of decades, increase in resistance to vaccinating children. And some of this stems from the very clearly defunct concerns about autism related to the MMR vaccine. And the study that had put this out originally has been rescinded, it has been disproven, but there has been this vocal subpopulation that has just refused to accept science. So there's going to be no getting over that if people don't want to work in science, if they don't want to live with science, if they don't want to value science, if they don't want to value the process. There's no arguing with that. So there's going to be a population that's going to refuse all vaccinations because of whatever disbelief they have. I still encourage them to talk with their providers. They're going to be their best sources of information. So this vaccine, if a family is already refusing vaccination for other things, they're obviously not going to take this vaccine. I think there's understandably, even among people who are, vaccine friendly, just some caution with a new vaccine. Again, this is basically the same vaccine that adults have been getting, just in a reduced dose, same composition, same sequence of the mRNA, generating, the same kind of immune response. So I think it's natural to have questions, and it's one of the reasons why really, our message has been, please, parents, talk to your children's doctors and providers about your questions about this. We want you to have good conversations with them. They know your children, they know you, and they're the ones who are going to take care of you guys over time. And that should be, your first call, your first stop if you have questions or concerns. We don't have, at our vaccine clinics, we don't have that kind of resource available to parents. And so if they're booking an appointment to get their child vaccinated, that conversation and decision making has already happened. But at the end of the day, this is going to come down to people's choices and the choices they're making for their children. And they're going to have to take responsibility for that.
Can you give us a general overview? You mentioned just a moment ago that this is at a lower dose, and it's the same that adults were getting, except at a lower dose. So can you go over that for parents just to inform them of the process for these young kids? Because now you're talking, what, anywhere from birth up to what age, or what's the age group?
Yeah, so this gets kind of confusing in part because we have two different vaccines that have been authorized in this age group, the Pfizer vaccine and the Moderna vaccine. And their dosing is different. Their timing is different. The number of doses is actually different. And so even the age range is different. So it can be really confusing. So I'll try to kind of clarify. So first of all, neither vaccine is available for anyone under 6 months. So a child must be at least 6 months to get either vaccine. Okay. So this won't be part of their, you know, they're born in the hospital, they'll get it here kind of thing. This is going to be, at least 6 months of age. That's just where the trials were done. So that's where the authorization age starts. The Pfizer vaccine goes from 6 months up to age five. So anything under age five would get this, pediatric or young pediatric vaccine. The Moderna vaccine is from 6 months up to under age six. So a 5.5-year-old would get this younger version of the Moderna vaccine, but we'll get the slightly older version of the Pfizer vaccine. The Pfizer vaccine is a 3-dose series with a very small dose of mRNA. It's, I apologize. I think it's 3 micrograms. The Moderna vaccine is 2 doses and it's 25 micrograms. So it's a higher dose of the mRNA, but given only twice. Do we expect that the Moderna will probably eventually need a booster like it does for adults? Probably, but that's not part of the original authorization, whereas the Pfizer is, it's a 3-dose primary series for this age group at this low dose. So we here at BHS, we looked at the two vaccines and opted to run our vaccine clinics only with the Moderna vaccine, in part because it's only 2 visits as opposed to 3 visits. It also has this kind of wider age range, so we capture a couple more, and there's overlap with our pediatric Pfizer vaccine then, and that's 5 to 6 age range. It also doesn't require dilution. There are some other things so that in the future we might be able to roll this out a little differently, even out to some of our family medicine or pediatric clinics in the future. But for right now, we're just doing our centralized vaccine clinics at Butler Memorial, and then there's a site up at Clarion as well at their wellness center, and the links, the information for all those is on our website, and people can sign up for that. But we're running just the Moderna. The thing that parents should keep in mind is at least in the state of Pennsylvania, pharmacists can't give vaccines to children under 3 years of age. And so as opposed to taking your elementary school age kid or middle school kid to Walgreens, CVS, Giant Eagle to get a shot there, they won't be able to vaccinate a 2-year-old. And so that's one of the reasons that we felt we really needed to set these up, because these are then have, we have some nurses who have pediatric experience administering the vaccines. It's within their purview. And it's just kind of a different access that is a little more limited because of just regulatory and who can give a vaccine to someone that's young.
In the past, we have talked about the many reasons why you don't want to get COVID. I just want to touch on that for just a moment. And I guess this could be for any age, because if we're just looking at numbers, at least from my perspective, we're not in the same place we were. But yet one death is too many. And you and I've talked about that before. We're not looking at the number of deaths, though, even though I can't remember the last one we had was about a month ago or a couple of months ago. Given that, why is it so important to be vaccinated, and why is it important to try not to get COVID? Does that answer lead into long COVID that we've been hearing about?
So, I think there are understandable reasons to ask kind of where the risk benefit for vaccination in this group lies. And I think that's kind of what you're getting at. All along, children have had, they have not had the number of deaths or hospitalizations from COVID that, their parents or grandparents have. Despite that, there are still kids who have been hospitalized and died with COVID. So we are still trying to reduce that number to as low as possible. On top of that, there are obviously, kids who, vaccination is still, still has some benefit in reducing the risk of just getting any kind of infection from COVID. It likely will help reduce the days that someone is infectious and shedding. And so when you think about these kids then being safer to, say, interact with their parents or grandparents, or be in school around classmates who may have an underlying medical problem that puts them at risk, it's just a way to try to reduce for that individual child their risks of a really bad outcome, but also reduce the chance of that child being a link of transmission to others who might have a harder time with it. In terms of long COVID, I think the studies on that in children, I think, are really still pending. What this means for kids being infected, I don't have a good sense that we, have a really good firm grasp on that. I mean, we struggle to understand it in adults, and it's much easier to study in adults than in kids. But what we will look back 5 years from now and say, that was or wasn't an issue for kids in this age range, I'm not sure yet if it's going to have the same, long COVID effects in young children as we see in adults.
Have you had a good response from community members with the pediatric vaccines?
We've had some early adopters, because there's always early adopters. We've only had one clinic here and one clinic at Clarion. And our next clinics each site are still a little bit later in the month, or into August. We also wanted to build these appointments in such a way so that parents would have a chance to have conversations with their kids' providers and get questions answered, and hoping that may give them an opportunity to do that and then make appointments to come in. I don't expect this to be, a gangbusters kind of thing. This isn't going to look like, our early adult COVID vaccinations where we had people lined up. But I think this is an important thing to offer. I think it's an important thing that, for us to support. I would like to see increased uptake of it. But for the reasons I talked about, I understand why it's unlikely to happen. And we just need to keep supporting conversation and keep, people talking about, this problem that's not going away.
Well, Dr. Love, since I have you, I want to switch topics altogether, kind of related. I know it's in your field, and that would be with monkeypox. And I just want to ask, is there anything else about the infant vaccines for COVID that we need to talk about? Because as soon as I start talking about monkeypox, people are going to confuse the two. Is that a problem in your world that people are going to confuse these two?
I'm not sure that people are going to confuse them too much. The messaging around them has been pretty, pretty separate. And, I think, once you have seen pictures of the monkeypox rash, I think you understand that this is something very different, than a respiratory flu-like illness. That said, it can get pretty complicated, and it's also difficult because there's just a lot of fatigue for hearing messaging around, viral transmission and public health issues and vaccination and test it, like all these things that, you know, people are understandably, you know, kind of tired of with COVID. And, you know, we're starting to talk about, you know, monkeypox in at least, you know, the same terms or same language. So I think it's important that we talk about both. I think it's important that we make distinctions between the two, so that people can help understand a little bit about where, you know, why they're different and, you know, why I, you know, may tell people to worry about one, but not the other for them, you know, individually or as a population.
Because I've heard, of course, vaccinations for monkeypox. And since we're talking vaccinations, it's just a curiosity factor and I'll be honest, how much do I pay attention to this and not? And it's exactly what you're talking about. You know, just as a community member, you hear more news and it's like, okay, do I have to pay attention to this? Do I not pay attention to this? Do I get a vaccine? Do I not? Do they conflict with COVID? I mean, there's just a lot of questions I think people may have, or they just don't want to hear about it.
Yeah. And so I think the message around monkeypox should be, you know, it's here. We're going to have, you know, transmission. The transmission from monkeypox is typically direct contact with, you know, someone else's lesions, so their rash, or things like towels or other linens that had been in contact with, you know, that rash. So I think it's not something that you're going to get, you know, occupying just the same room as someone.
Okay.
In the same way. There is some respiratory spread. It's uncommon, and just doesn't seem to be nearly as efficient as the contact spread. But, you know, I'd be remiss if I said, you know, it's never spread by, the respiratory route. But it's just, as opposed to COVID, which is just so darn transmissible, you know, in the respiratory field. And you remember early on in COVID, you know, people were like wiping down their groceries and things like that. And it really took a long time for the public health community to say, listen, you know, we appreciate your attention to this, but that's really not a transmission risk. So you can, you know, that's not where you should focus your attention. You know, monkeypox, like I said, it really, we need to focus on where those interpersonal contacts are occurring. Meaning, if this is really like one person to the next with, you know, really, you know, frequently skin to skin contact. Okay, well, how is that happening? Where is that happening? So, you know, the CDC and the DOH have kind of laid out some epidemiologic, you know, links for us to think about when we're talking about risk. And, you know, if we see someone or someone has a rash, you know, what's the chance that it's monkeypox? Kind of depends on what their risks are, right? Because they can still get a rash from Lyme disease this time of year, or a bug bite, or anything else, right? You know, the monkeypox rash tends to be a little different. Its distribution can be a little different, but it's also been presenting in the current outbreak a slightly different way than kind of classic monkeypox that we've seen come out of Africa a few times. So currently, the risk factors include return from a foreign country in the past 21 days. And there are certain countries in particular that have a lot of monkeypox transmission right now. A lot of them are European countries. So traveling back from the UK, Spain, Portugal, Germany, might ring a bell of concern, you know, if someone has a rash. One of the other risks could be, you know, contact with someone with a similar rash. I was visiting a friend of mine and, you know, we were sharing a bathroom and, you know, some towels and some bedding. And, you know, he developed a rash while I was there and I didn't think much of it. But now I have a rash that kind of looks like his. So maybe, you know, we need to think about that. You know, that's a logical risk. The third risk has to do with social interactions. And this is the one where the DOH and CDC have messaged around. Especially the community of men who have sex with men, MSM. And, you know, some of their large social events, some parties, things like that, where people may have multiple social encounters, might have multiple sexual encounters. and transmission in those spaces has been very, very rapid and very evident from contact tracing. So the issue is really, do you fall into one of those categories where, you're kind of at a risk, and then do you develop a rash? Now, that's identifying potential cases. When you're talking about vaccination, currently, the vaccination process is really only done through state departments of health because this is a vaccine that's being released from the federal government. So it gets released to the states, and the states kind of distribute it and come up with a plan for it. Pennsylvania, I've not yet seen a kind of exact plan for what vaccination looks like. But typically, the DOH has been and other places have been using vaccine to vaccinate people who have had close contact within the last 4 days with a suspected case. Vaccinating very shortly after exposure reduces the risk of progressing to infection. And so that's one way to kind of interrupt the transmission chain, is vaccinating between the time of exposure or shortly after the time of exposure before symptoms develop. There are increasing moves to vaccinate at-risk populations, especially in large urban areas. So New York City and I know Boston's had a few of these. Some other towns and cities, specifically rolling out vaccines before exposure or potential exposure, particularly for the MSM communities. I'm waiting to see kind of how this gets rolled out here. I know PA's been allocated, some vaccine doses. I checked yesterday. I didn't see anything particular from our state, but I may have missed something. But if you called me today and said, do I have vaccine? I do not. We do not. That would have to come through the DOH, in a specific probably post-exposure prophylaxis maneuver.
And just let me clarify. So if folks just joined us in our conversation, we're talking about monkeypox in this moment. I know we started talking about COVID, the vaccines for pediatrics, for infants, if you will. And then we moved on to monkeypox. So just to clarify, when you say you don't have a vaccine, that's what we're talking about in this moment. But Dr. Love, let me...
We have more than enough COVID vaccines.
Right. So let me circle back around to that, since that's how we started. I just have one more question. When you were talking about monkeypox and you were talking about traveling, that's what brought this question to mind. So we started talking about the infant vaccines. What's the time frame prior to school or a trip should we get the vaccine so that vaccine can be fully effective?
You mean for COVID?
Yes, the COVID vaccine for infants or pediatric vaccinations.
Much like adults, the full immunity from vaccination in the primary series against COVID is 2 weeks after you complete the primary series. So for the Moderna vaccine that we're doing, the two doses are 4 weeks apart. And so you get the kid gets the first dose 4 weeks back, they come back for the second dose. 2 weeks after that second dose, they would be considered fully immune. So it's a 6 week, period from first dose till recognized, full immunity.
Very good. All right. Dr. John Love, of course, the infectious disease specialist with the Butler Health System. And just be on the lookout, parents, if you want to get your young ones vaccinated with the Butler Health System. Of course, as Dr. Love indicated, another session will be coming up later in August. So you can look out for that with the Butler Health System. Any final thoughts, Dr. Love?
Now, I would just encourage people, take a look at our website. We have put updated materials both on vaccine scheduling, with our clinic, as well as an updated grid so people can understand which of the COVID vaccines are recommended, how many doses over what period of time, and what the age range for each one is, to try to make this as clear as possible for our community.
As always, a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Tracy. Have a good day.
And you as well. And folks, thank you very much for joining us for this segment of your extended News at Noon. As always, you can hear this and other conversations that we have aired on our extended News at Noon on our website. So I will point you to WISR680.com. You're going to pick programs, drop that down to extended News at Noon, and that's where you can find our audio. Thanks so much. I'm Tracy Morgan with the Butler Radio Network.